Blog Talk Radio.
January 28th, and this is one of your hosts, Virginia S. Grenier, and I have Marcia Casper Cook with me as well.
Hi.
Hey, Marcia.
Hello.
And this is our once a month show that we do where we focus on families and life and things just to help make, you know, our lives better. And I guess before we jump into our topic for today's show, we should share a little bit about the shows we have coming up in. Marcia, I would, because last night you had A Good Story is a Good Story. Normally you're kind of more in the daytime, but it was a later in the evening show.
Well,
so
yeah, I keep changing around. It depends who the guests are because, you know, sometimes they just can't come. These guests wanted nighttime, and actually we had somebody from Australia, and she couldn't get on. So she did get on the last few minutes. So I guess that we planned the show around the timing, but that didn't work out too well. We started at 8, you know, which is our usual time, but and now I do shows with you in the afternoon. I do think this is a really good time for a show.
Yeah, yeah.
Even though I love doing the night shows, I do. And it's most of our, you know, listeners are archived because people are working and they're not supposed to be having their computers or phones when they work. But they seem to manage to get Facebook done and then everything else while they're working.
Yeah.
So they don't have to do it at home. They have to do it at work. But that
exactly.
was it. That was a good show last night. We had Naughty Nights Publishers at Press, and Gina was on, and she's the publisher, and it was great. She's in Canada, and it was really great for her to come on. And we're glad that the show went on because of all the bad weather. Elizabeth was my co-host, and she's in Connecticut, but everybody made it, and Blog Talk is in New York, so we were all here, so that was a good thing. And so
luckily everybody's
getting back to normal.
Exactly. And then it looks like we don't have any other shows scheduled for the rest of this week.
Right. And
right. But next week, so February, can't believe we're already getting into February.
I'm like happy to get like April. We'll be fine where it's like nice out. I'm done.
Yeah,
right.
It's true. You're done with the snow and wind already?
I mean, we're lucky in Chicago. I shouldn't say anything, so I don't want to, you know, very superstitious. So it's sunny right
now.
I'm happy.
It's kind of nice today. Yeah,
today is not bad.
February.
You know, I talked to Fran Lewis, who is, you know, a reviewer and has wonderful shows. Actually, her show is next Thursday. But she said it was doing pretty good out. She's in New York, so she said they had a lot of snow, but it was pretty good. So I think everybody's getting back to normal. That's a good thing. There was no UPS in some places. So we're happy to be here today.
Well, for next week, I know we have a lot going on for the first week of February. So February 2nd, which is Monday, the Writing Mama show, which is my show, will be back on the air. And we're changing up the way Marcia and I both have actually been talking, and we're changing up how some of the shows are going to be ran on World of 8 Network. So for the Writing Mama show, I am going to actually have a couple bloggers on, and we're going to be, so for the first week, the first Monday of the month on the Writing Mama show, or it's going to be focused on blogging. So
that's what I have
planned.
Am I on that show?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You are more than welcome to join us, Marcia.
Okay, I didn't know if I'm on it or not. Okay. Because I don't have a show on Tuesday.
Join me.
Our guest is ill, so we're not. So Elizabeth was going to be with me, with Trent, and he's not feeling well, so we're going to postpone that. So I don't have a show Tuesday.
So February 3rd, The Good Story is a Good Story is postponed.
Yes.
And then we will not have a What Is Success show on the first Wednesday, which is February 4th of the month, because we are holding out for the awards.
Yes.
With the Academy Awards coming up in
February.
Yeah,
we'll pick a date for that. Right.
Yeah, so we'll be picking a date closer.
And then
Candy
will probably be having a show, and then our new show starts, Woman, Today's Woman, I think, will be on in February.
Correct. So a lot of things going on that first week.
Yeah. It's good.
Yeah. So
we should bring our guests out because they're very busy and they may have to leave, you know, have patience. So I think we should bring them out.
Yeah. Okay, so today on the Family Matters show, we were contacted about a book that is actually releasing in February, talking about how everything's happening in February, that is called From Stress to Center, A Practical Guide to a Healthier and Happier You. And Marsha and I kind of started talking, we're like, well, you know, as writers and, you know, writing coaches and doing blog talk radio, we know we get stressed out.
Right.
And we hear a lot of writers that we talk to on the shows talk about stress. Like,
it's
what a
big,
great book to have, like, fall in our laps. And,
yes,
you know, obviously.
Because, yeah, we're always talking about it. Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
our family lives get stressed out. So we decided that we would kind of change the show up a little bit as well with some of the changes that we're doing. And we invited the two authors to come on to the show today and to talk about their book and to talk about how we can manage our stress levels and get ourselves centered. I know I do yoga 3 times a week to help center my chi, so and I always feel better afterwards.
It's important. No, it is important. No, and I
it
think
is.
That that's why you are. And they're, you know, they're both going to really give us some hints, and they're going to tell us some things. And I think, I really do think, you know, they're not on the air yet with us right on yet, but I will think this is going to be a very big book because I think it's universal. It's
yes,
a problem,
yes,
a huge problem.
Definitely.
For people.
So we are going to start with our we'll start with ladies first. We'll have Dana come on, and you can share your background. And I want to also let our listeners know both of you guys are licensed clinical psychologists. So you're not just writing a book about this. You guys actually have practices. So Dana, I'd love for you to share about your background and a little bit about who you are with us and our
sure.
listeners.
Sure, sure. Well, I'm happy to be here. I look forward to the show. And so my background, you're right, I'm a clinical psychologist with kind of an area of specialty in health. And I also do life coaching as well as executive coaching. But over the years, I've had a private practice, and part of the book came from working with many, many women over the years and seeing the challenges they've had in coping with stress and self-care. So my focus over the past about 10 years has been working with them around self-care and stress management and seeing what a tremendous difference it makes in their life when they do start practicing these things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, and Dr. Dan Guerra?
Oh, hello. Thank you for having us. I really appreciate it. My name is Dan Guerra. I'm also a clinical psychologist and an executive coach. And I have a private practice here in New York City. And I think similar to Dana, developed a psychotherapy practice largely around health and wellness and stress management, seeing that stress was such a prevalent kind of problem in our society. And yet there was a lot out there that could contribute to helping people in this area, both from, you know, traditional Western approaches that we have, you know, more popular in our culture, but also from Eastern practices that I also had the privilege to study and integrate, and that's in our book too.
That's great. And now I'm curious, how did you guys meet? Are you guys both within like the same building of where your practices are, or have you guys known each other from college? Or because, you know, finding a co-author is not always easy, and so it's always interesting to kind of learn how the two came together.
It's a great question. You know, I think it's part fate. How would you say, Dana? I think
I would agree.
Yeah. We touch on the same spots in lots of ways, both in our, I think, in our approach to working with people. And the way we actually met was through a coaching program that we took together, and we discovered that we had a lot of similar professional interests. And I think it was a real natural progression to want to do something together. I'll let you answer that, too. I don't know how
right.
you took it, Dana. My take on RMB.
Yeah, no, I really feel like it was, you know, almost fate as well. I mean, our backgrounds are very similar, you know, both clinical psychologists with a specialization in health, and we met through this executive coaching program, and we just really got along very well, and things just flowed easily. So at some point in our, you know, our friendship and collegial, you know, relationship, I suggested, why don't we write a book together? Because we saw there was such a nice complement between stress and self-care and bringing them, you know, finding a way to integrate them together. So, and the collaboration part of the book probably has been the easiest, I mean, because we work so well together. So
it sounds
really
like,
nice.
No, it sounds like
to,
a great
I want to
match.
Jump in and just emphasize that too. I thought one of the surprising beautiful parts of this process was us working together and realizing how it flowed and you know, learning about how to write a book together, as you mentioned. It's not, you know, it's not the easiest thing in the world, but we handled it pretty well, I thought.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
I think that's
it
a good thing,
very,
you know.
Very
I think that, yeah, it's very good that, you know, that you can work together well, because sometimes you don't know that you can work together. Similar to Virginia and myself, we did one show together. We've been doing shows for over four years together. You know, we don't always do them together, but we've been partners in World of Ink for all these years. And we just met, and that was just, I put an ad in for, you know, an assistant, actually, and Virginia, we never met in person. We are going to do that soon, though. That's on the list. But, you know, right, and we end up talking, you know, because I know when Virginia and I are together, like, the question she just asked was something I was thinking. We always know that some way one of us will get the question out, because we think very similar on a lot of our shows, you know, so we have that in common. So that's a good thing. I wanted
great.
To add, last night we had a show. I had the show, like I was saying before, and there was somebody on the show, and she had mentioned she was going to give up writing because she felt she was so stressed by the social media and the fact that she would go on and she would read what everybody was saying. They sold their books, they did this, they did that, and she's feeling insecure because why isn't she selling like they are? And she was ready to give it up and getting depressed about it. Why is this happening to people? Rather than being happy for people, they're not. They're getting envious, and maybe it wasn't even in the personality that they had before, but now they seem to be, you know, developing this.
So she was, let me just make sure I'm clear about it. So she was feeling depressed and sad that her book wasn't selling as well as some of the other people?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And that happens a lot, because I see that a lot out there. What would you tell somebody like that?
You know, part of managing stress and our emotions has to do with the appraisal of situations and how we label it in our minds and how we attach, you know, positive, negative valences to it. And I think, you know, part of good stress management in part is to sort of at least begin to understand how we tend to do that. Now, there are certain, you know, external circumstances, obviously, that are extremely stressful, but a lot of it we have some control of by changing the way we think about it internally. You know, in the book, we talk a lot about external stress and internal stress, and knowing the difference is important, because if we can start to look at the parts that we have some control over, then we tend to be able to manage that stress better. So in terms of this example, you know, perhaps, you know, just looking at those negative thoughts and starting to maybe challenge them a little bit and replace them with more positive, probably truer thoughts, like, you know, obviously, you know, if there's less sales, that's a hard fact, but maybe it's, you know, not quite as bad as she's appraising it. Maybe there's something that can be done. Maybe there are more options than she's originally thinking or feeling as a result of just that initial comparison.
Yeah.
So that's the beginning part.
Yeah. I think so, because I think that people are, I mean, that's one of the things, Virginia, I hear a lot. It's the stress they feel about doing social media, trying to fit that in, trying to get to the right place, trying to get to the right people. And we have shows, and they seem to all go down to the fact of how everybody hates doing this, but they're all doing it. You know, I mean, so why? I mean, if they hate it, what can they do themselves to kind of get some kind of balance where they don't start hating it and having and they like doing what they're doing again?
Well, I think you make several really important points. One is around the social media, and part of the social media, the evolution of that has created a context of an increased the frequency of social comparison, because now we're much more exposed, right, to what everyone's doing and what everyone has.
Right.
So I think it makes it now more prevalent for people to compare themselves with others, which we know psychologically doesn't typically make ourselves feel positive, right, or feel good, especially if we compare ourselves unfavorably. But the other part is that there's a tremendous pressure, I think, externally for us to do everything, you know, especially if we write a book or we're trying to promote something, that we should be able to do it all. And that we should be able to do it at the same time, and that it should be able and should come easily to us. So I think those expectations that we often put on ourselves because of what we're, you know, hearing from, let's say, our friends or our peers or our colleagues, becomes overwhelming, and it can often then lead to stress and feeling, you know, you're not doing enough.
Are you going to go on book tours, or is that what you're going to do, to go out there and do you have a plan? I mean, I'm sure you do have a plan. You have a publicist. What are you looking forward to soon to do?
We have a really exciting celebration coming up in New York City on February 6th. Virginia and Marsha, if you're in town, you're invited. And that's
absolutely.
A book launch party. And, you know, we're expecting some press there and so on. And we'll see about, you know, what's going to roll out in terms of book tours.
Right. You're going to have to find your own, because you both have practices. So I guess that's going to be a little difficult.
Right. Well, I think the other point that you made was, you know, to find what works for you, that social media and doing that may work for some authors in promoting their book or getting sales, but for others it may be public speaking, right, and maybe blogging. So to try to find what works for them individually that they actually enjoy and that they don't, that doesn't lead them to feel stressed or overwhelmed.
Right.
I think that's really important.
Yeah, enjoying it. See, that's what I find, that people aren't having a good time doing it anymore, you know, and I myself, you know, like Virginia and I love to do the shows, and that's one of the things we love to do. And when people are on shows, and that is great social media, because you're a lot of places when you're on the radio and you have a chance of putting it on your website or whatever, and people are hearing you, which does help, because then people realize you're a regular person, you know, when they can hear you. You know, depending on what you say. there's so many different ways, but I think that, you know, a launch is a great idea to start it, a book launch. That's going to be fun. And it starts February 3rd, though, is when your book comes out, right? That's when.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yep.
We wanted to celebrate. So it's kind of your point about having fun and really wanting to celebrate this milestone, you know, this accomplishment. So.
Celebrating success is an important part of you know, good self-care and making that a point to do along the way, like you said, the milestones. I want to just go back real quick to the thought part about, you know, you made an important point about, you know, if we're not having fun doing what we're doing anymore, it can be very stressful and very upsetting. And I really think this thinking piece is so important, because the way we appraise what's going on, the way we judge it in our mind, will immediately start to lead us down a path of feeling states and emotions. And so we have an opportunity when something's happening to sort of stop for a second and say, you know, what am I doing? Am I complaining here? Am I making this negative? Am I immediately going to why things aren't working? And if we have, you know, some attention to that, we begin to start to gain a little bit more control over our emotional experience about what's happening. Now, obviously, this only, you know, goes to a certain point. Some situations, like I said, are extremely stressful and hard to come out of, you know, a thinking positive approach about it. The point is not to be Pollyanna about things, but we have much more control than we initially think in our thinking life about how we're judging situations, I think.
Right.
I have a question for you guys. I was just wondering,
mm-hmm.
The thing that I see, especially when, not just like in my writing life, but in my own family life, is I see people don't tend to, my husband's a huge culprit for this. I'm really glad he's not around to ever hear me do my show about this today. But he always
luckily
says,
he doesn't
no,
listen to some
be,
of the things you say.
No, he doesn't listen to my show. That's what's so great. That's why I can use him. But he has this rule. He calls it his rule that when he's doing something, you don't help him unless he asks for help because he'd just rather do it on his own, which is going back to what you were saying earlier, Marcia, about how, you know, a lot of people think especially as writers, like we think we just can take it all on our own.
Yeah.
But it seems, because I'm even seeing this like with my kids, it's like this crazy idea, and I know it's just the way our society in many ways has, because there's so much that, because of technology and everything is sped up, that so much more pressure, you know, seems to be being put on us, even though we're really doing it to ourselves, that somehow we have to figure out how to get it all done. But it's like the teamwork or asking for help portion has been like erased from our brains. Are you guys seeing that when you've talked to people, when you go out and you go speaking, that a lot of people feel like they can't ask for help because it shows it's like a sign of weakness? Because that's kind of how it comes across to me a lot of the times.
Mhm. Right. No, I completely agree. I've seen a lot of that. I've experienced it in my own personal life. I've seen it in my family. I've seen it in clients, you know, many, many times. There's definitely that perception that if you ask for help and if you reach out, that it'll be perceived as a sign of weakness. And the message is that you can't do it yourself, which is very unfortunate, because then oftentimes people do wind up feeling that they're alone with whatever their problem or challenge is. And they often then sometimes will feel isolated or overwhelmed.
Yeah. Yeah, see, that's overwhelming feeling.
I was going to just add that I couldn't agree more with Dana, and I could just, you know, can just share from my own personal life that I run into this from time to time. It's that we don't really like vulnerable, and there is a vulnerability or, you know, a sense of, like we're saying, you know, that it's a weakness to ask for help. And yet, at the same time, we know that we need one another. And when we can connect with other people and build relationships, you know, everybody thrives. But yet we do have that initial sort of tendency, or, you know, some of us have that tendency to feel like, you know, that there's something not worthy in that somehow.
Yeah. See, that's
right.
To go alone or not to go it alone. You know, and sometimes when you are in a group and, you know, like it does, you can sometimes, I think that a lot of people don't think they can learn anything from somebody, and that's a problem beneath. That's not even about really being stressed. They just can't learn, and they don't want to, and
right. They
feel that they know a lot. And we see this in the author with authors a lot. You can say something, but you know they're not listening because they think it's the right way. And sometimes, I think, Virginia, what you talked about with me before, kind of where instead of being happy for people that have made it, people are unhappy for people, which is really sad, because they may have been doing this for 10 years and they finally got something good that happened to them, and you're thinking, oh, well, who cares? And that's bad, because
yeah.
we forgot how
right.
to be happy for other people.
And
so
I think, you know, and I can
yeah.
And I can talk from personal experience on that, because, you know, I've been doing this for 10 years, and I met Marcia halfway through, a little over the 10 years now,
yeah.
but I met Marcia halfway through my career. I was only 5 years in when we met. And out here in Utah, we've gone through a huge boom where a lot of Utah authors have made it onto the New York Times bestseller list, and they just happen to be authors that I have come in contact with various times early on in my career at conferences and stuff, and you know, I've gotten to know them, and we've exchanged the emails and, you know, chat off and on back and forth, you know, about life. And all of a sudden, one of them is James Dashner, whose book, The Maze Runner, just was made into a movie. And I remember way back, early in my career when I was watching this happen with people I knew, I started kind of feeling like, well, why is it happening for me? You know, I'm working really hard, and I'm doing this, and I'm a woman, I have three kids, and, you know, so... Yeah, and I was especially like the male authors where I'm like, you know, they just go home. If they have kids, their wives are taking care of the kids, so they can just go type on the computer. I can't just do that because my kids come in and bug me because I'm mom. And so I kind of started letting it get to me, and I realized, you know, I should be happy because if they're able to do it, it's kind of paving the way for me being in the state that I'm in, where everybody kind of looks at it like, you know, the Mormon LDS populist state, that there is an opportunity to breach, you know, beyond the Utah borders. I can actually expand beyond and become nationally known, not just state known, as an author if I have something that's, you know, out there for mainstream, you know, populace that people are going to like. And so it, I started looking at more that way. Like, you know, they're paving the way for the rest of us, you know, in this state. Because for the longest time, most known Utah authors were only known in Utah. If you talk to anybody outside of Utah, they're like, who? So to me, I started looking at it that way, like, you know, they're paving a path for the rest of us that we can get beyond our little state border here as authors. We can expand beyond, you know, our own little state. And so I kind of turned the tables. I think I'm not in your book. Do you guys help? Is there like kind of like a, I hate to say like a 10-step process, but is there like some type of, you know, kind of guide of how to, for someone to go from a very stressed, negative way of thinking to a more centered, stress-free way of thinking? I mean, how does the book really help somebody with those kind of issues that are going on in their lives?
Well, if you don't mind me jumping in, Dana, yeah. Sure. Virginia, that example you gave is the perfect example of what I mentioned around, you know, changing your appraisal of the situation. You shifted your thinking, and I think, you know, one would argue that you didn't shift it to anything outlandish or Pollyanna or out there. It's very, very real what you said, that if you could be happy and start to look at this as, you know, opportunity rather than, you know, something that you're missing out on, you feel better, you know, and then even would argue that it would sort of channel your direction and your effectiveness and in your writing to sort of have that experience. Well, you know, you asked about the book. In the book, there's a section of stress management practices, and there's one called thought stopping and thought replacement. This comes out of the cognitive behavioral, you know, psychotherapy literature and you know, cognitive behavioral world, where we have an ability to change the way that we're thinking by first noticing which thoughts aren't serving us and then replacing them with either neutral or positive thoughts. And this is an evidence-based technique. It's been around for decades and really has shown to help a lot with managing stress, anxiety, and decreasing, you know, depression. So I think, you know, your example was perfect in that sense.
Yeah, so I think people don't realize that they have the power. They have the power to do this, but they don't think they do.
Right.
They have the power to overcome something that's really bothering them. So I think it sounds
absolutely
like it
right.
will help
very
so many
true.
People. That's why I think it's going to be very successful. Because, so what age group, like, would you say when children, I see this a lot, you know, I worked for pediatricians for years as a lab tech, and I was in the office and everything. When is the time that you realize that maybe your child needs some help if they're stressed, let's say, with their homework at a young age? I mean, what do you do with them when they're so you can see this pattern starting?
You mean when they're
very young and they're very young and they're starting to feel stressed at school, and would that be a time for parents to maybe say, maybe I should get my child some help or try to work out having some fun or something? Because I think a lot of kids, when they're in grammar school, they're already worried about high school, and when they're in high school, they're worried about college, and they kind of don't enjoy the moment at all.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. We're actually seeing, I'm seeing a lot of this, with teenagers being even younger than teens, but experiencing a lot more stress than they ever have. And hearing, you know, mothers especially being very concerned about their daughters and children. But I mean, there's several aspects, one of which is, you know, you've mentioned, you know, quite a bit, is the having fun and balance. And I think if parents see their children really becoming stressed over work or, you know, future worries about college or high school, to really start to, you know, kind of educate their children and help them see the importance of balance in their life, that it's not just schoolwork or, you know, becoming the top, you know, the top player in whatever sports team they're on.
But
to help them recognize that having a more balanced life and making fun a priority, as well as, you know, friendships and things that really renew them and give them joy and make them appreciate, you know, what they do have and qualities in themselves, can really help them get a better perspective on their life. And then kind of helping them, and our book has that, you know, practical strategies, which I think can be used at an early age, both, you know, the stress management exercises Dan was just referring to, and the chapters on self-care, you know, learning to, you know, evaluate the quality of your relationships and to, you know, learn how to set boundaries so that you can, you know, carve out and have more balance in your life.
Because I think that's a good advice, and I think that, you know, my son is grown already, but I do, and I did a lot of writing when I was waiting for him in games and whatever, and that's when I did a lot of writing. But I think myself, I'm wondering how a lot of these people that we know, Virginia and I have young children, how are they getting this all done? And that's why they're stressed, because they're trying to write, they're trying to raise their family, they're trying to pick up the kids, and they're expecting too much at a time when they have to pay attention to their children. So, because I'm thinking, do they spend time with their children? They're on Facebook all day, they're tweeting, they're whatever, and what about their kids?
When Dana was talking, I was thinking that one of the questions I might ask parents who are dealing with children who are feeling a lot of stress is, you know, what are the parents doing for fun and for relaxation? And that might sound like a unattainable luxury when you're having small children, but I think to Dana's point, it's very important that time be made if you want to get the things done that you want to get done effectively and you want to thrive in life. It's one of those overlooked pieces that, and really a little goes a long way. I think we emphasize that in our book a lot.
That's really true.
You'd be surprised that if you just turn your attention to learning a skill or two and spend, you know, a few minutes each day just remembering it or thinking about it or practicing it, it can fill you up in a lot of ways. And having fun is important for parents as well as children.
Yeah. And that's a great point, the modeling of that. You know, for parents to model it themselves, and then the children learn from their parents, right, how to cope with stress, what to do about it, to feel empowered, right? Like you were mentioning, many times, you know, people feel powerless to change the situation or to maybe think about it differently. But there's many things you can do to better manage your stress. And if the parents can learn some of those skills, they can model that and then share that with their children. And it's really powerful.
Yeah, because kids watch you. They do. Children watch you. Whether parents realize it or not, they're watching. You know, and when you're on the phone all the time, Virginia.
That's a great point, because I have two young kids. I have a 9-year-old and a 5-year-old that are home. And now a college student who's out of the house. But lately, like just recently in a shift, which Marcia knows, actually I've made a few shifts in my life. The first one, I used to be in the fashion industry, which is very high stress, very fast paced, constant travel, you know, type job. And when I got pregnant with my second child, which is my 9-year-old daughter, my husband and I looked at each other and he's like, are we going to have a nanny raise this one too? Or, you know, what are we going to do? And that's how I ended up actually in Utah from the LA Hollywood area, was because I decided to walk away from my career to be a mom. And I stressed out because even though I was there for my kids, I had nothing to do, which is how I fell into writing. But for a while I was doing a part-time job, which Marcia knows. And I started noticing the stress level rising in my house, so I actually quit doing that job and decided, you know, I just have to find other ways to balance out our finances here at home without being out of the house, because I could feel the stress level. And by doing that and being home with my kids, you know, now we go for, like, nightly walks, And I find that now my girls are going on walks with us at night and stuff. Now, you know, my 5-year old's old enough that it's easier to go do that with, that the stress level in our house has slowly been dropping because not just spending time as a family, but we're physically active as well. And my husband now is walking because he actually works in the emergency responder profession, which is a very high stress profession to be in. And so he started walking. And he's like, you know, I feel better after I walk.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering how busy people's lives are now. I know that's one of the biggest things that we hear about all the time, that, you know, the weight in the U.S. is, like, just getting out of control. And I think a lot of times it's because no one's taking the 30 minutes a day to just physically exert their bodies. And I think it's more than just, you know, having better health physically. I think mentally we need that. At least I've seen that in this last year now with us as a family, making sure every night we go walk.
Yeah. You said mothers and daughters a lot. You see dad a lot. Would you like to talk a little bit about that? Because we have a lot of mothers, you know, we have shows with empowerment, mothers, daughters, and things like that. And what kind of issues are you seeing?
I don't see a tremendous amount of mothers and daughters, but what I am seeing is, you know, the daughters sharing with the mother and the mother's witnessing their daughters becoming increasingly stressed with, you know, not being able to sleep, changes in their eating, you know, because they're so overwhelmed or stressed with, you know, it's not just, so they're a huge workload, right, with homework, but then they're usually part of varsity sports. So there's the competitive level and are they keeping up with that? Then there's the normal developmental, you know, biological developmental issues they're dealing with as they develop physically and dealing with that. And then they have their own internal stressors thinking about, you know, if they're in high school, they're trying to prepare for college. And then all the expectations that are being placed on them and what they perceive that they need to do to get into a good college. So all of these cumulative stressors over time pile up. And the children, and daughters here, the ones that I've been hearing about, are having, you know, tremendous difficulty coping with all of this, including, you know, peer relationships and, you know, the social comparison that you mentioned before. So cumulatively, if they're not able to, or if they haven't been releasing some of that stress and practicing some good self-care, it really does build up and it creates, you know, mental health issues, depression, anxiety issues, things like that. So it's definitely a concern.
Is there anything that the schools could do that you think that maybe that they're not doing, some of the schools, you know, because that's where the kids are so many hours of the day?
Yeah, no, I agree. It's not really clear. I haven't been very involved in the educational system, you know, here in Connecticut or in other parts. But I think having some programs for, you know, for elementary school, you know, children as well as high school about, you know, how do you manage your stress? You know, how do you really practice every day, practice good self-care? And it's not just, you know, in our society, we think a lot about self-care is nutrition and exercise, but it's a lot more than that. And if you practice good self-care every day, it really helps you better manage and even inoculate you from, you know, a pile up or cumulative stress in your body and in your mind.
Probably the cumulative, that really just gets, then all of a sudden
it
then
is. Right. So
now, do you both do executive coaching? You both executive coach?
Right.
What does that entail? Like, what type of coaching would that be for executives?
Coaching is working with managers and executives and corporations to try to address both business issues, but also personal development. That can take the form of, you know, learning leadership skills, taking your already talented group of people to even the next level. And often what we find is when we're doing the executive coaching work, that there's so many parallels to home life, having a leadership role in your household or running into emotional control or self-regulation or stress management, you know, in the home. Of course, work-life balance, by the very nature is about home and work. So that's the snapshot on executive coaching, among other things.
Right. Well, I think that's good because you can see, you know, because it does matter because when if you're at work and then you come home and it's just too much, then you're on, you know, you're ready to boil over, I think, if you can't control it.
Right.
Which does happen for some people, you know. In this world, it is tough. You know, the way it is now, it is tough financially, you know, health, and it's just, you know, it's a lot. And then there's health care issues for people. There's so many issues that I think that they, you know, sometimes they don't know where to turn. So they do get stressed out.
Right.
And that's, you
right.
know, and so I think that if they start with work, if they realize that both are combined, I think that sounds like a very good idea. They can manage their life rather than just keeping one separate and not realizing that it matters what you do at home also.
Often we separate the two, and what we find is that if we really look into a lot of the working dynamics, they sometimes, you know, mirror some stuff from family, right? There are people in positions of authority, and there are, you know, you have your coworkers who can be like siblings, and so
that can happen.
All of those same issues, kind of tend to appear. And sometimes what you'll find is the opposite occurs, that somebody's operating at work in a way that's really needed a little bit more at home, or vice versa, you know. And so it can be a real interesting, you know, exploration and, you know, way to help.
Yeah, because some people are there. It is like siblings. You know, this is on the
family,
same topic. Yeah, but, you know, like it seems to be, which is true. I seem to see this, and I, you know, sometimes people when they become men and women, when they become adults and they're still seeing their siblings, they act exactly like they did when they were living at home and they were 10 years old. Why is that? It's like they never move on from things. You see that all the time, and that's a lot of stress for the holidays, let's say.
Yeah, I'm saying in my old career, I remember a lot of people saying, are we back in high school?
Yeah.
It would always be like the comment on the buying floor. Are we back in high school?
Yeah, it seems to go back. It seems to go, people tend to go back to the behavior that they had then, and they're adults. They can't seem to stop.
Right.
That's why Thanksgiving, is stressful, because then you go, people are going, oh, we have to go with our family, okay, you know, and then by the time they get there, they're so stressed out that there is a fight somewhere, usually. Somebody gets mad.
Right. That's true.
Do you see that a lot? Yeah, I think that, you know.
Yeah. Right. Even if you know.
Absolutely.
Exactly. You try not to have any family fights, but yes, it's for sure. Almost inevitable.
Yeah. Right. There would be no movies or TV because you wouldn't have that. That's what they show. They do show that because they fight just like they did when they were kids. And the parents, if they're alive, hopefully, then they say, what are you doing? You know.
Right.
Because
funny.
Just revert back to when you're a little kid.
I have a little bit to say about that. Oh, sorry.
No,
I was going to just say that neuroscience has a little bit to say about that, is that we have these, you know, when the brain is developing in our earlier years of life, it's really like the primal brain. It's very emotionally laden. So these emotions and these memories and these experiences kind of get seared into the brain through like emotional grooves, you know, and yet we age and we have new experiences and we develop past that, in quotes, right, in lots of ways, but those memories are still there and they can be triggered, you know. And this is my point about the work too. You might be in a work situation and find, why am I reacting so strongly to this person or this meeting or this, you know, this situation that I'm in? And it could very well be because that's reminding you of something very powerful that you've experienced, you know, at a much younger age. And we can't escape that. We can only be aware of it and notice it. And this is where things like coaching and psychotherapy come in. It helps us, you know, we therapists often get a lot of slack in movies and parodies about always focusing on the past, right?
Yeah.
But part of it is just sort of, you know, acknowledge it. It's not that we're trying to stay there, but we, you know, sometimes seeing what happened can help free us in the present. You know, just noticing, that's because it reminds me of this, or that was that time when that happened to me. I was bullied, or I was, you know, this or that, and then we can choose to react to it differently or risk it differently.
Yeah, I think that sounds really good advice, because I think people need, you know, they just keep doing the same behavior, and I think if they realize that they are in control of their own behavior, at a point where then they don't, you know, just because they did something 20 years ago doesn't mean they have to do it now. They have to kind of change, which is hard for a lot of people to change. Very
right.
Hard.
Well, right. Yeah, and I think this is a great topic that's come up. And I'm just curious, and either one of you guys can jump in on this, but, you know, when I teach my writing class, on the first, and Marcia's heard me say this, I always tell the wannabe authors to just to look in the mirror and take a long, good, hard look at themselves, because they can't really understand who they are as a person. How can they really understand who their characters are? And so I'm just curious, because of what you were just saying, Dan, and like I said, you guys can both jump in on this, but what is, like, one thing that you would suggest that someone can do to be more self-aware? Because I think that's where a lot of our stress comes from, is we're not aware of our own selves, like our own patterns of what we do. You know, I think people who tend to be more centered, who tend to be, I don't want to say totally unstressed, but, you know, less stressed out, you know, be more stress-free, it's because I think they notice their behavioral patterns, even if they still oops and they hiccup and they go back into a not-so-positive pattern, they identify the fact that they did it. And, you know, they're not walking around with, like, the rose-colored glasses on. Because I think the majority of us do. I think a lot of people run around with this rose-colored persona of who they think they are and don't really see what they're doing every day or how they're acting.
Right, when they go, who, me?
Yeah, really, I did that? I would never. And you're like, did you not just hear yourself 5 minutes ago? And I know we're all guilty
of it. That's a great point.
So you can see we did a lot of shows, because honestly, these are the things that come up. I mean, you know, being on this show is so good to hear all of this, because people, I hope when they listen, kind of see who they are by some of the things that you're saying, because constantly these things happen. And these are people from all walks of life, every, you know, female, male. It's just there's so many of them that, you know, they do show these behavior patterns.
I can share. You know, what you're mentioning, I think, is it is so important. And I really think the first step is taking back the power of change and recognizing that we have a responsibility to ourselves and to others about how we respond. And recognizing that the change or ability to change comes from ourselves, and not looking externally and saying, this person made me feel this way or caused me to react this way. So if we put the responsibility outside ourselves, it makes us very difficult to change our behavior, because we're often then blaming somebody else for how we're responding, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if we recognize we can change, and if we react a certain way, maybe, you know, really strongly to something, or, you know, we feel like we maybe said something, you know, abruptly, if we recognize, and part of this also increasing our awareness, so just, you know, becoming more aware of how we're responding and how we're interacting, and recognizing that, which is empowering, that we can change it. No matter how the other person's reacting or responding to us, we still have the ability to respond in a way that feels right and has a sense of integrity for us. So I think that's really important.
Would that be something like filtering? Is that like before you talk, kind of think about what you're saying rather than just say it?
Yeah, I remember.
Well, that helps.
Yeah. Some people don't. They just say everything.
Yeah, in my psychology classes, our professor, he's put in groups, because I actually took psychology as my minor in college, and my professors used to put us in groups, and we would talk to each other, but we had to use the word I, like, I'm feeling this way, not you made me feel this way. They would make us reword everything with the I. So even though we were feeling a certain way, it wasn't we were saying, well, you're making me feel this way, this is how I'm feeling because of the situation. And all of a sudden, we'd all kind of start changing how we would interact with that, with whatever that person was saying, because we were now identifying how they were feeling, so we would come at it in a different way.
It was really
insightful.
That's a great example.
Piggybacking on
what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
What was that, Dan?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to just say, kind of adding to what Dana had said, and also picking up on your example, I think one thing that people can practice – that we, I would say collectively, especially in our culture, are not so great at, but can be learned, is this simple thing, is to pause. Now, what does that mean? Well, just like a playback on a recorder, when you hit the pause button, is that we're constantly running from when our eyes open till the moment we go to sleep. And there's a way that we can stop without being ineffective. And I think it just is a few moments of saying, hold on. First of all, you have to have the willingness, as Virginia alluded to even want to make a change or to bring it back into the eye, which Dana said. But if you have that willingness, then you say, let me stop for a second. What's going on here? What am I concerned about? What am I feeling? And just that beginning practice to stop every day, we call it pausing. We call it reflecting.
Yeah.
We have practices like mindfulness that help us to pause. Just that very act can really begin to start to increase awareness, which was the original question, I think, about, you know, what can people do? And I think, you know, pausing, we talk about it in the book as well, about how to do that better.
Yeah, that's
right.
Yeah, because I think it's a really wonderful thing. You know, my husband always laughs because I do say one thing. Whenever I see a movie or on TV, I said, uh-oh, there they go, right to the mirror, because they look in, because I believe that that's what you need to do sometimes, look in the mirror. That's why Virginia, when she talks about that at class, because if you look at yourself in the mirror and really look at yourself, and almost all, you see that a lot in scenes because movies are taken from reality. And it's like, stop for a minute and go like, what am I doing here? Instead of just saying something bad, kind of look at yourself and say, maybe I need to do something different instead of the same pattern.
Mm.
Yeah,
right.
I think people, it sounds like your book is going to be
that's
really
a great
good.
Point.
I mean, so I'm looking forward to reading
thank
it.
Thank you. We appreciate that. Yeah.
And, anytime you want to come on, you can come on again because, you know, there's always, you know, we always have a lot of things going on. to talk
We'd
about.
Love to come back.
It sounds great. It sounds like
I hope everything is good. Your book launch. See, it's really meant to be because, see, now the weather will be good and then everything will be fine in New York. You won't have to worry. It'll be a great book launch. They've already had the storm. That's the end of it.
That's right. That doesn't mean another one's not coming, but we can cope with it if it does.
That's right.
New Yorkers are tough.
Yeah, on our website, we will put actually the link to your book, and we'll put it on our blogs, and so they, you know, everybody can find it. And we really wish you the best. I mean, it was really fun talking to you because, you know, it just confirms what Virginia and I have said a lot. You know, we do talk about this a lot, and it's a very, very interesting, complex subject, but you put it into a good, solid form for people. So I think they can actually feel like with just a few steps, they can change things.
Oh, very nice. Well, that was our
intention.
We
really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
We
Virginia? Go ahead.
I was just wondering if you guys had any closing, you know, comment or statement that you'd like to leave with our listeners about, you know, having a more balanced life, you know, or where they can, you know, kind of keep tabs on what's going to happen with the book launching in February so they can kind of keep tabs on how everything's progressing. And, of course, I know right now on Amazon they can pre-order a copy, so...
Right.
Definitely want to throw that out there for our listeners. But is there anything else you'd like to leave with our listeners? You know, any food for thought for them?
Sure. Well, it's one aspect, the listeners can go to our book website, which will actually kind of share a little bit more information about the book and what they can really learn and how they can benefit. So that's www.fromstressedtocentered.com. And also on each of our websites, for example, on my website, which is my full name, so danagianza.com, but they can go and get a free self-care inventory, and they can take that for free, and it'll help them kind of be able to better assess their current level of stress.
Oh, that's good. That's great.
Yes, and because sometimes it's very hard to really figure out, determine how stressed we're feeling at the time. We often underestimate. And then Dan has something on his website. Do you want to share, Dan, what you have?
Sure. The website to find more information about me is www.dan-guerra.com, and you can have links to purchase the book both on Dana's and my website. And you'll find out a little bit more of the different things that I practice and who I work with. And I'd like to share with the listeners just three areas that you can begin to think about when you're getting ready to practice stress management and self-care. And that's the way we think, our breath, and our bodies. How we, you know, treat those three areas can really lead to, you know, better stress management and better self-care. And you can download two free chapters of our book at the website as well, so you can get a taste for what
that's
we're talking
right.
about.
That's good. Right. And then, you know, and ours yeah. will be our your will be on World of Inc. Network, so people can also hear you and hear some of the things you said today. Because, you know, in a short while, I'm making notes already. Because Virginia and I both do that.
That's
we
great.
Don't make notes for questions. We make notes for what the, you know what is said. And what you just said right now, I think, is really a good thing, because those are three things that people should really think about, and they don't probably
right.
much. You have to take time.
Right.
I think that's basically what
yeah.
you're both saying. Take time to think about what you're doing.
Yeah,
well,
absolutely.
Like
don't
and just
take
one personal
of the
time.
Go ahead. Right.
I would say
personal
time seems to be missing out of our lives a lot now.
Yeah. Yeah,
it
personal
so
time.
True.
And
just
right, and good,
and
yeah, we wish you all the best, and thank you so much for being on. And you, as
great.
We said before, you are welcome anytime.
Yes, yes, definitely.
Okay,
definitely
thank you.
Get in contact.
Thank,
oh,
you,
thank
so
you
so much.
Thanks,
for
Marcia.
Us.
Thanks, Virginia.
Bye, thank
yeah,
you.
Really
welcome.
Enjoyed it. Bye.
Thank you.
You're
good.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
And then just so our listeners know, again, the book is From Stress-Free to Centered, and it's a practical guide for healthier, happier you. I had to, like, think really quick because it's not in front of
yeah,
my
no,
eyes.
That was, you know what, it's they were really good. I mean, because it's,
yes.
it, you know, these are certain steps that everybody can do, you know, and because,
yes.
you know, and I think really what you're saying to us, I think what they're saying is take a little time. I think you and I have learned this over this last year. I think we really have. I think we're a lot different than we were before. I think we realized.
Well,
and I think it's
well,
part
I
of
know,
that.
Well, you and I have talked about this, you know, off
yeah.
the air, you know, us personally in running
yeah.
World of Inc.,
yes.
which is one reason why we wanted to have Dan and Dana on the show today, because we've talked about how can we do things more efficiently
yes.
and not be working ourselves around the clock, because
right.
it's not healthy.
We both have learned that. You, I think you've learned
yes.
it a little better than me, because I see that you have your message to say you have hours. I don't have hours, but I think that we both have learned a lot over the last year, and this really puts it into what we really need to do for ourselves, because I think they're right. We have to think about, you have to think about yourself.
Yeah, and not be selfish, like think about yourself.
No, that's not,
a,
that's not
person.
In a bad way. It's because you can't be good
yeah,
to other
no.
people as you're telling your classes unless you really are happy with the way you are and what's going on in your life.
Right.
But
I think
you know.
That's what I'm saying. I think sometimes people think that if you are concentrating on yourself, then you're being selfish. No, it's again, it's like what you know both Dana and Dan said. It's finding the balance.
Yeah,
I think
the book sounds really good, and I think
yeah.
you know what he's saying is think, breathe, and body. I think take a breath, pause, and I think that's true because a lot of people don't. And sometimes if you're mad, sometimes maybe it is a little better to step back for a minute and say, wait a minute, before
well,
I talk, maybe I should think.
Yes, and here's something else for people to think about, and I know we didn't get into it on the show at all, but I think when we don't pause, like Dan was saying, and like you're saying, you know, we're mad and we sometimes, and you and I just recently went through one of these
yeah,
because
yeah.
we didn't have clear information and we reacted
yeah.
versus taking a
yeah.
step back and really, even though we knew there was circumstances where things weren't good, we didn't take the time to pause and investigate and really think about. We were reacting.
Yeah,
and that's,
I think that, yeah. So I think this just says we did the right thing.
Right. We have now paused and we have now made the right choices. But
that's right.
We and that's the thing.
They were great.
You,
I am going to get their book
yeah.
because I think it's a good thing to have because I think
exactly.
it's very helpful. All right, thank you.
Yes.
Virginia, it was fun, as usual. So I
yes.
think it's great. Take care.
So
bye-bye.
And we invite everybody next week to tune into
Monday
the World
show.
Of Inc. On Monday, because that's when we kick up again with some more new shows. And, of course,
yes.
you can catch all of our other shows on demand as pod and as podcasts, both on Twitter, Facebook, iTunes, here at blogtalkradio.com, World of Inc. Network, or at worldofinknetwork.com.
Okay.
Goodbye.
Right,
take care,
Good
everybody.
Night. Bye. Bye-bye.
The world of things.